Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Yashoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Yashoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Rukmini Dwarkadish, Rukmini Dwarkadish, Rukmini Dwarkadish, Rukmini Dwarkadish. Jaya Jagana, Jaya Jagana, Jaya Baladeva, Jaya Subhadra. Jaya Goranitai, 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 Jaya Goranitai. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paravrajak Acharya Asatara Sri Srimad. ISKCON BBT Founder Charles of Iron Grace, AC Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Kijai. Nitya Lila Prabhisha Om Vishnu Pada Zavayan Grace Shila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada Kijai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Kijai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai. Premsaka Hosh Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dityananda Shri Adaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Kijai. Shri Shri Radha. Nabadam Kijai. Shri Nabadit Mayapur Dam Kijai. Shri Achal Jagannath Puri Dam Kijai. Ganga Mahi Kijai. Jamun Mahi Kijai. Bhakti Devi Kijai. Shmati Tulsi Maharani Kijai. The most beautiful Lordship, Shri Shukmini Dwarkadish Kijai. Shri Shukmini Dwarkanath Kijai. Shri Shri Jagannath. Baladev Subhadra Kijai. Shri Shri Gornitai Kijai. Samabeta Bhakti Brinda Kijai. Going back to home, back to Godhead Kijai. ISKCON Los Angeles Yatra Kijai. Brihad Madanga Transcendental Book Distribution Kijai. International Food for Life Transcendental Prasadam Distribution Kijai. Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan Kijai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga Glory Srila Prabhupada. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udhiriyat. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of God and Lord Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Sarasvati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, who is a translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashta prayeshu badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavata uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. By regularly attending the Srimad Bhagavatam class and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving devotional service unto the personality of God at whose worship of transcendental songs becomes established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is chapter 11, and we're going to do text 7, 8, and 9. So 7 has a short purport. We'll do that responsibly, then I'll read the other two. Nimeshas Trilavo Gaya Amnatas Te Trayaha Kshanaha Kshanan Pancha Viduhu Kashtam Lagu Ta Dasha Pancha Cha Nimesha Strilavo Gheya Amnataste Trayakshanaha Shadan Pancha Vidukashtam Laghuta Dasha Pancha Cha Nimesha Strilavo Gheya Amnataste Trayakshanaha Shadan Pancha Vidukashtam Laghuta Dasha Pancha Cha Nimesha Strilavo Gheya Amnataste Trayakshanaha Kshanan Pancha Vidukashtam Laghuta Dasha Pancha Cha. Please chant. Kshanan Panchavido Kashtam Naguta Dasha Panchacha Laguta dasha panchacha. Nakshana. Vaishnavis? Amnataste trayakshanaha kshanan panchavido kashtam laguta dasha panchacha. Imeshastri lavogheya amnataste trayakshanaha kshanan panchavido kashtam laguta dasha panchacha. So synonyms, nimeshaha, the duration of time called a nimesha. Sri lavaha, the duration of three lovers. Geyaha, is to be known. Amnataha, it is so called. Te, they. Triyaha, three. Kshanaha, the duration of time called a kshana. Kshanan, such kshanas. Pancha, five. Viduhu, one should understand. Kashtam, the duration of time called a kashta. Laghu, the duration of time called a lagu. Taha, those. Dasha pancha, 15. Cha, also. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. The duration of time of three lovers is equal to one nimesha. The combination of three nimeshas makes one kshana. Five kshanas combined together make one kashta, and 15 kashtas make one lagu. Please repeat. The duration of time of three lovers is equal to one nimesha. The combination of three nimeshas makes one kshana. Five kshanas combined together make one kashta, and 15 kashtas make one lagu. Srila Prabhupada's purport. By calculation, it is found that one lagu is equal to 2 minutes. The atomic calculation of time in terms of Vedic wisdom may be converted into present time with this understanding. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tsamini. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvashesha Shunyavadi Paschacchadeshtarine. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishang Shapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyahang Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanmatam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitangsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dhina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosite Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanepyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So by regularly attending the Srimad Bhagavatam class, every one of you knows the Mangalacharna by heart. Yet, somehow if you sit here on the hot seat, the asana, you will probably forget it. That happens. That's called conditioning. Things that we know, due to conditioning, we can't get them out. Right? So all of this knowledge in the Srimad Bhagavatam, as we're building up these different units of time, we know these things. But because of conditioning, covering by the material energy, we think we don't know. So it's an uncovering process. It's not that we're learning so much as that we're uncovering. We are by nature pure. We are by nature sat, which means eternal. Chit, which means knowledgeable. And ananda, which means blissful. But those three features of the living entity, which are there because they are there in the Supreme Lord, in our conditioned state, we are not experiencing that we are eternal. We're fearful because we think we're these temporary material bodies. We're not experiencing full knowledge. We think we read the sentence, oh, man, this is going over my head and this. And no, it's there. It's not going over your head. It's in your heart. It just has to be uncovered by this Bhakti Yoga process. So the Bhakti Yoga process is an uncovering process. By practicing Bhakti Yoga, seriously, all of this knowledge comes out, our awareness of our eternality comes out, and we become joyful. We become joyful, really happy, not falsely happy. Like, you know, I like to take pictures of devotees, and I always tell them, don't give me a Bollywood smile, give me a real smile. You know, so we learn to put on the Bollywood smile and look like we're happy, but we're not really experiencing happiness. But we can experience real happiness by this uncovering process. So why are we covered? Why are we conditioned? This morning was very nicely explained in Subhasa's reading from the 6th canto, chapter 4. And I think the text was 40-something, 44 or something like that. Anyway, I was reading about Daksha's interaction with the Supreme Lord. And in that purport that he was reading this morning, he's going to continue tomorrow morning, it was mentioned that we're conditioned because we're rebellious. We've rebelled against the service of the Lord. So you can't rebel against something if you're not in that something, if you're not participating in that something. You see what I'm saying? Just like we have rebels in a society, they're part of the society, but they voluntarily choose to rebel against the society, rebel against the authority. So that indicates that we were engage in Krishna service. There are those who think, no, we're just eternally in this material world. But Prabhupada's purport and the presentation of Bhagavatam repeatedly reminds us, no, you were serving Krishna and you voluntarily rebelled or turned away from Krishna. And therefore, we're covered over in this material world. We forget our eternality. We forget our knowledge that is innate in the spiritual nature. And we forget our happy condition, or happy, normal, happy situation. And therefore, the Bhagavatam, again, this Bhakti Yoga process, hearing the Bhagavatam, gradually we uncover that knowledge that's there. We uncover our awareness of our eternality, and we become blissful. So these building blocks of time that are being mentioned here, as we mentioned in the previous class, these are just names, so don't get hung up. You know, we're still conditioned. Part of our conditioning is this modern scientific, viewpoint. We always think that we have to reconcile with them. No, just the opposite. They have to reconcile with us. The Vedic knowledge is standard and unchanging. It's not that later on the Bhagavatam will be changed so that all these names change to match up to what scientists discover. No, it's not going to happen. These names, the Truti, and all of these names that you're reading, Kshana, Lava, all of these things are fixed in the Bhagavatam. And if you want to try to correlate it to modern understanding, fine, but it's not necessary. As we say, they keep changing. Our Sariputta Prabhu put it very succinctly, because he also mentioned that in the scientific community, there's so much they can't prove or disprove. So when they argue with someone, especially creationists, they try to get the audience to laugh. Because there's a saying, a horse laugh is worth 1,000 syllogisms. A syllogism is a logical step in an argument. But if you don't have the logical steps, if you can just get the audience to laugh at your opponent, then you've won. So a horse laugh is worth 1,000 syllogisms. So we can point out to them that they're always changing their presentation. So at some point in time, they did have a name for what they thought was the smallest particle, and that name was atom. But then, oh, now we've discovered subatomic particles, and we give them all kinds of names. Those names are not really, you know, it's just like naming an object anything. You could call a rose a lotus if you want. It doesn't change the quality of the rose, you see? So the name is not what's important. It's the essence of the thing. So the essence is being described here. In the previous verse, we heard about a truti, 1,687.5 part of a second. That's a truti. And the importance of that to us is that it's mentioned in the 10th canto. The gopis are praying, Atati yad bhavan ani kananam, truti yugayate tvam apashyatam. So they were aware, they're village girls in Vrindavan, but they were aware of a truti, what a truti is. They mentioned it in their prayer. Atati yad bhavan ani kananam. Every day, you're talking to Krishna, every day when you go to the forest, truti yugayate tvam apashyatam. A truti, which is 1,687.5 part of a second. They're saying that duration of time that we don't see you becomes like a yuga. Truti yugayate, yugayate, tvam apashyatam. Pashya means to see, apashya means we're not seeing. And then what happens? Kutila kuntalam, makamte. Then you come home and we see the curling hairs on your face. Jada udikshatam pakshmakrijasham. This jada, they're referring to Lord Brahma as being foolish. His foolish creator has given us eyelids so that, again, for a fraction of a second, we can't see you, even though you're present before us. So the gopis, again, they're simple village girls, but they were aware of what is a truti. It's just a very small fraction of a second. So now we're building up from the truti, we're building up to the lagu and the anu and all these things. But again, these are just names of different durations of time. Now we've come up to the lagu, which is equal to 2 minutes. We're going to read the next two verses and then we'll say a few more words. So, text 8. Laguni vaisamam nata dasha pancha chanadika te dve muhurtak praharaha shadyamak saptavan rinam. Srila Prabhupada's translation. 15 lagus make one nadika, which is also called a danda. 2 dandas make one muhurta, and 6 or 7 dandas make 1/4 of a day or night, according to human calculation. So, what is 1/4 of a day or night? Day and night is 12 hours, so 1/4 is 3 hours. You divide 12 by 4, you get 3. So, 6 or 7 dandas make 3 hours by our calculation. And then the next verse, text number 9. Dwada sharda palon manam chaturbish chaturangulai swarnama shai kritak shidram yabat prashta jalam plutam. Prabhupada's translation. The measuring pot for one nadika or danda can be prepared with a 6-pala weight, 14-ounce pot of copper, in which a hole is bored with a gold probe weighing 4 masha and measuring 4 fingers long. When the pot is placed on water, the time before the water overflows in the pot is called 1 danda. So again, we're getting to bigger and bigger measurements of time. Purport, it is advised herein that the bore in the copper measuring pot must be made with a probe weighing not more than 4 masha and measuring not longer than 4 fingers. This regulates the diameter of the hole. The pot is submerged in water, and the overflooding time is called a danda. This is another way of measuring the duration of a danda, just as time is measured by sand in a glass. It appears that in the days of Vedic civilization, there was no dearth of knowledge in physics, chemistry, or higher mathematics. Measurements were calculated in different ways as simply as could be done. Now, in order to create something that measures a fraction of time, then you have to know independently what that fraction is. You can't just take, for instance, let's take an hourglass that we have experience of in the West. You know, it's that double V shape and glass filled with sand, and you turn it over. But if you're trying to calculate, let's say, a minute with a sand glass, or an hour, they call it an hourglass, then you have to know what an hour is. Otherwise, your sand could be run out in 52 minutes, and you think it's an hour. You see what I'm saying? So whoever creates that hourglass has to know what an hour is to demonstrate that this sand runs out in exactly 1 hour. Otherwise, if you just put some sand in a glass and keep flipping it over, it could be running out in 47 minutes or 58 minutes. So you have to know what an hour is so you can make an accurate hourglass. So the same thing is going on here. They're making an accurate instrument for measuring time, so they have to know what that time is. See? You can't just artificially make a water pot with a hole and claim that the water runs out in X amount of minutes unless you know how to define X amount of minutes. It's like nowadays in the modern world, they have what they call nanoseconds, billionth of a second. Something is, can they measure a billionth of a second? What instrument can you use to measure? No, but what they do is they have a computer and they make a program with certain amount of instructions, lines of instructions, and they run it and they didn't time it. We know how many lines of instructions we put in, and we know it took the computer a minute to calculate those instructions, therefore must have made X amount of calculations per minute. And they can say, this computer is doing 1 million calculations per minute or however, you see? You see what I'm saying? So you have to have some way of figuring out what it is you're measuring. Even if you can't exactly measure it, nobody can measure a billionth of a second, but they claim that things are happening in a billionth of a second. So how do they know that? Again, by having a bigger picture that you can then divide into smaller parts depending on the performance. So if you give a computer, let's say, 10,000 lines of machine code and it runs through that in 1 minute, then you know it's performing 10,000 lines per minute. You don't have to measure every individual line. So in this way, in the Vedic period, Prabhupada is pointing out here, they must have known. They have knowledge of physics, chemistry, or higher mathematics to be able to create these instruments for measuring duration of time or measurements. You know, we talk in terms of yojanas and things like that. So they were not unaware of these things. But the main thing for us to concentrate on is that Krishna is beyond all of this. And not only that, he can empower his devotees to be beyond all of that. And an example would be in chapter 89 of Krishna book, which is entitled The Super Excellent Power of Krishna. So we know that there was one brahmana. He gave birth to a son, and the son died immediately. Who remembers where that was? Where did it happen? Dwarka, yes. It wasn't Vrindavan, it wasn't Mathura, it was in Dwarka. So the brahmana brought the son to the palace of the king. Well, who was the king in Dwarka? Ugrasena, yeah. He brought it to Ugrasena's palace and he complained very bitterly. Called him all kinds of bad names. And Prabhupada lists in the Krishna book. Of course, it's there in the verse, but Prabhupada explains each of them. The first thing he called him was Brahma Dvisha. Somebody who is an enemy of the Brahmanas, envious of Brahmanas, Brahma Dvisha. And he called him a lot of long list of names. And Arjuna was there, happened to hear, and he was wondering, why is this guy insulting the king like that? So he had, what happened? Well, you know, my son is born and died untimely, and Prabhupada explains that if a child or anybody died untimely, it was the king's responsibility. The king's responsibility. And the king was, one of the things he called him was loba. He was greedy. And Prabhupada said, if the administrative head is greedy and self-interested, then they can't look out for the welfare of the citizens. So it's very instructive if you read that chapter describing how a king, how an administrative head should behave, the mentality they should have. They should not be envious of anybody. They should not be greedy or self-interested, etc. So Arjuna promised that, okay, I will guard the maternity home. And Brahma said, come on, Krishna's here, Balaram is here, Pradumna, Aniruddha, none of them could prevent it from happening. What makes you think? No, I will make sure, don't worry about it. And if I don't, then I will enter into fire. So the Brahmin said, okay. And then when the next child died, in the presence of Arjuna, meantime, he shot all these arrows around and he had his Pashupati weapon from Lord Shiva. And it stated there that even though Krishna was present, he actually took shelter of Lord Shiva, which Krishna didn't like, because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kama Sarita Kana Prapadyate Anya Devata, those who have lower intelligence, foolish intelligence, they take shelter of demigods. So Krishna wasn't happy about that. But Arjuna took shelter of Lord Shiva. He made all these protective mantras and arrows and stuff. Lo and behold, the child died. So it was explained that Krishna actually removed all of that protection. Now, the reason I'm bringing it up is because Arjuna was empowered. He had the mystic power. He went all over the universe looking for the child. He went to Yamaloka, first of all. He went to Varuna Loka. He went to Indra Loka. He went to Patala Loka. He went to Brahma Loka. Now, what's the significance of that? The prophet himself said that Brahma Loka is the topmost planet in the universe. And by modern calculation, it would take 40,000 years to get there. The prophet says that. So obviously, he couldn't spend 40,000 years to go there and come back. So he had mystic power. In a fraction of a second, practically, he went to all these different places all over the universe. How is that possible? Krishna's empowerment. Krishna's empowerment. And then finally, when he was ready to enter the fire, Krishna says, no, I'll explain what happened. So Krishna put him on his chariot, took him all the way across the universe to the covering. And it's explained there that the horses were obviously mystic horses, they're not ordinary. When you get to the edge of the universe and you're about to enter the coverings, it's dark, so they hesitated. So Krishna took his Sudarshan Chakra, put it out front to light up the way, and then they went through. Went all the way to see Mahavishnu. You know the story. Mahavishnu explained that he's the one who took them all because he wanted to see Krishna. So they go to see Mahavishnu, billions and billions of miles away, and they come back, and the Brahmana is still alive. It was stated there that he was a young Brahmana. Now, if it took them thousands and thousands of years to go there and back, obviously the man would be an old man or dead. So my point is, even though we're learning all these different fractions of time, when it comes to Krishna, it makes no difference. Krishna can, in a truti, Krishna can go see Mahavishnu and come back. So Krishna is the Lord of time. He is time himself, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita. Kalos mi loka shaitra. So he is time, he's the controller of time. He can dilate time, he can contract time, he can do anything he wants. That's Krishna's position. And he can also empower his devotees, like Arjuna, to have similar power. Imagine if you could go to Brahma Loka and come back and class is still going on. How can you pick out something like that? That's Krishna's empowerment. So from our perspective, two takeaways. Don't be upset if you can't wrap your head around all of this. Because again, that knowledge is already there. Concentrate on purification. As we become purer and purer by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra purely without offense, all of these things are gradually uncovered. Gradually uncovered. There are so many examples, like in the life of Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He was sitting down in Calcutta and he would exclaim, just see that rascal, what he's doing. He was talking about somebody who was in Vrindavan. How could he see from Calcutta what this guy was doing in Vrindavan? Empowerment. So, Krishna can empower us to see things far away or to go someplace and come back real quickly. And anything that you can imagine, any mystic power, because Krishna is Yogeshwar and he can empower his devotees to do all kinds of seemingly impossible things. So, yes, we should try our best to understand the difference between a chuti and a nimesha and a lagu and a danda, but don't freak out if you can't, because it's not really the essence of the thing. The essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam is to take shelter of Krishna, just as the essence of Bhagavad Gita is Sarva Dharma Parityaja. The essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is to take shelter of Krishna by hearing about his glories, his pastimes, his entourage, his activities, everything that is in relation to Krishna will bring us to the point of actually experiencing Krishna face to face, talking to Krishna. Even here, Prabhupada said, the deities are ready to talk to you. You're just not prepared. We're more eager to talk to some ordinary person than we are to talk to Rukmini Dwarkadish. So Krishna says, all right, I won't disturb you. You just can't wait to get out of the temple and run somewhere and talk some ordinary stuff, get on the internet and interact with. Okay, go. What can I do? But if you want to talk to me, I'm standing here waiting to talk to you. That's Krishna's position. So, yeah, and as we hear Krishna's pastimes, that uncovering process takes place. There's a nice verse in the second canto. Shrinvatam sharaya nitya grinatascha chachesatam kalena natidirgena bhagavan vrishate vrida. So it says, Shrinvatam shradaya nitya. One who's hearing Shrinvatam shradaya with faith, nitya, constantly. Grinatascha chachesatam. And without any deviation, kalena natidirgena. Just a very small fraction of time, Bhagavan Vishvatevrata, Krishna will become manifest in the heart of such person. In other words, all your material coverings will disappear and we will be reinstated in our normal, happy, spiritual position. So we'll stop here. A few minutes if there are any questions. I think the first hand that went up was Bhakta Emil. Hare Krishna. Coming, just now coming.
Hare Krishna, thank you for explaining us the Srimad Bhagavatam. My question is, we say that, we wrote that the society, the Vedic culture, they were like advanced in mathematics, science and all that, but they didn't like, from what I know, I understand, they didn't like build like extraordinary, like they keep it simple, their material possession. Is it because they didn't need it to have like, as we are at so-called advanced in...
Hare Krishna, good observation. Actually, it's only partially true. The ordinary citizens lived very simply. Attached cottage, whatever they needed to get by. But on the other extreme, they built wonderful temples for Krishna. So a lot of the temples that you see in India that are considered to be thousands of years old, they go back to the Dwapara Yuga, because in that yuga, elaborate temple worship was the process for self-realization. So they did that. They built elaborate temples, some of which the modern scientists can't even figure out to this day. They can't figure out how they did it. And not just in India, all over the world. We see there were so many huge monuments, like the pyramids in Egypt and pyramids in South America, Central America. They can't figure out how these people could move such humongous stones and cut them so precisely that in the majority of the constructions, they didn't need any mortar. Things like, I've been to Peru. I went to Machu Picchu. And you see the way the stones are cut there. They're so precise. They didn't require any mortar. How could they do that? How can you primitive people cut a block of granite so precisely that it's, you take a T-square nowadays and it's perfectly right angle and it fit together perfectly with just a little notch so that they don't slide off. So these things are amazing. So it's not just in India. We're not saying it was India, because the Vedic culture spread all over the world. It wasn't just in India. But the point is that modern presentation is constantly changing, and things that they can't explain, they just put under the rug. Jutakarma Prabhu can explain more in more detail what's called a knowledge filter. They make up their mind in advance what they want to present, and then they look for evidence to present it, and anything that is anomalous, they sweep under the rug. They don't want to deal with it. But But these things are too big for them not to deal with. You can't overlook the pyramids. You see? If it was something tiny, they were covered over. So in the Vedic culture, the ordinary people lived on a very simple way. But they built vast edifices for glorification of God, Krishna. And many of them are still existing, as you know, for thousands and thousands of years. So you need precise physics and mathematics to create those kind of things. It wasn't accidental. It's not that a bunch of, you know, primitive people just somehow or other, oh, no. Very precise. Architecture and construction techniques that we can't imagine. Okay, who was next? Brigham was next?
Sorry. Yeah, on that pastime you were telling about Krishna, Arjuna, and Mahavishnu, did that take place before or after the Battle of Kurukshetra?
Good question.
The reason I ask is because if it was after the Battle of Kurukshetra, how is it possible that Arjuna could be taking shelter of Lord Shiva after the Battle of Kurukshetra?
No, it must have been before. Yeah.
Must have been before
because... Actually, no, I should go and look, take a close look at it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Logically, it seems that it was before. Because Krishna constructed Dwarka before the Battle of Kurukshetra. Because of the attacks of Jarasandha and, you know, all these others, he didn't want the residents of Mathura to be stressed anymore, so he moved them all to Dwarka. So that was definitely before the Battle of Kurukshetra. Now, this particular pastime with the Brahmana, again, I would... conjecture that it's before, but I'll collaborate. I'll look it up and give you. Unless somebody else knows, anybody else has a definitive answer about that? Was it before? Tutankhamun, maybe? Okay, I'll look up a definitive answer for you, but my right now I'm going to say that it was before. Yes, Maharaj?
Thanks for a nice, inspiring, exciting class. I hope we have more of them from you in the future.
Hare Krishna.
I just have one point I'd like to make. The question really is that why are we always forgetting Krishna? And why are we putting all these other things as more important, as more valuable, as things for thoughtfulness? And the thing is, as Krishna himself tells us, how not to do that. Always think of me, he says. Become my devotee, offer obeisances unto me, worship me. Always think of me, not partially think of me, occasionally think of me, once in a while. He doesn't say that. He says, always think of me. That's very difficult because we have so many material desires on top of many of our spiritual desires or with our spiritual desires. So we have to be trained. That takes a lot of training. We have to be asking myself, am I thinking of Krishna now? Or am I thinking of something else? So the more we will be thinking of him, the more he will be giving us his grace as to how great he is, like Archita was just telling, how glorious he is, how wonderful he is, how amazing he is, and we will not forget that. And we will think, yes, I have to be thinking of Krishna, because there's no one greater, no one better, no one higher, no one more venerable than Krishna. So we have to always be following Krishna's instruction. And if we follow that instruction, he promises to give us his grace to always have a realization of who he is, how great he is, how wonderful he is, and how we should not ever derogate him, but put him down and think that he's an ordinary person, even though he plays the part very often of an ordinary person. Don't be fooled. Fooling is for the Maya people. But for the devotee people, no. He appears like us, but he's nothing like us. And if we have this, look at Prabhupada. He was always thinking, Krishna is great, Krishna is glorious, even though he's doing all these things, playing with the cowherd boys, joking with them, joking with the cowherd girls, acting like an ordinary person, and yet never ordinary. And that's what Krishna wants us to have. He wants Arjuna to. He says, always think of me. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your obeisance. If you do this, you will give up all of your illusions. If you do this, you'll give up all your false ideas about who I am, what this world is. Reality will stick with you, and you will not fall down into the foolish thinking that Krishna is, well, he must be ordinary. I mean, look at, he talks like us, he acts like us, he does things like us, so why shouldn't he be ordinary? No, he should not be ordinary. Never to be thought. It's a trick. And those who don't fall for the trick become very Krishna conscious and become perfectly realized and able to perform the love of Krishna, the duties and love of Krishna as Krishna would like them to be. That's all.
Thank you, Maharaj. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivedanta ki
jai. Thank you. Somebody can now. Can I contact somebody? Anybody make any offenses during the classes?